Welcome to another Wednesday on the Beat. And if you are expecting any stock picks, they are going to have to come from offensive tackles on the Ohio State roster. This is the Austin and Berm Show. He is Berm. I am Austin. And I guess we could make them stocks, right? But it's really been position, rewind, review, preview for spring camp still. And I know that there have been a lot of them, but we're almost to the finish line. And I wanted to break it up between tackles and the interior of the offensive line, Berm, because there are a lot of moving pieces there.
Yeah, there's a lot of intrigue, especially at tackle, where Ohio State is going to be making some pretty big changes from a year ago. And for Tyler Bowen in his first year as the head coach of the offensive line group at Ohio State, he's got a lot of pieces to play with, and they don't seem in a lot of cases to make perfect sense. I think there's a lot of like, well, let's try and jam this rectangle into this square hole here and see if we can just make it fit because it kind of looks the same. But one of the things that I think is most interesting for Tyler Bowen that he has to deal with this year, and as people are now seeing on the screen, the returners, the departing guys, and the new guys, if you look at this, he's entering his first year as an offensive line coach since 2017, having to replace not just two first-round picks in Josh Simmons and Donovan Jackson, who's not even listed here as a departed tackle because he really was still a guard for Ohio State.
I don't know. Not for the national champions.
I didn't put him on here because it seemed like the guy spent 3.5 years playing guard. I feel like it's silly to put him at tackle, but obviously he was instrumental in what Ohio State did. It's the loss of Zen Mulholski and George Fitzpatrick, two guys that you were certainly counting on for major depth. Maybe they weren't going to be the starters this upcoming year, but George Fitzpatrick specifically really seemed to make a push towards the end of last year. And we heard about that from Justin Fry when we spoke to him last. Like, there was some momentum going for George. He transferred to Kansas State. Zen Mulholski's at Indiana. Those are two guys who were entering their fourth seasons with the program that are now gone. So you're replacing them with a lot of new guys, and not just new guys that are in the program for the first year, Ethan Anianwa, Philip Daniels, Carter Lowe, Javon McFadden, but new guys, Austin Sereveld moving over from guard or whatever he's been, Ian Moore, who didn't really play as a freshman, and Deontay Armstrong, who didn't play at all as a freshman. So it is a very interesting first year for Tyler Bowen to have to take over as the offensive line coach at Ohio State.
It sounds like you were much more surprised that George Fitzpatrick moved on rather than Zen Mulholski. And Zen had his chances, I think, to claim a starting job, and then unfortunately got hurt when he was right there on the cusp against Oregon. Like, you can't just say, well, it's an injury, that's why it was never going to happen. It felt like there had been previous opportunities for him to step to the forefront, and it hadn't happened. And he got what seems to be a nice payday to move over to Indiana. I don't necessarily fault him for that. At the length of his career at Ohio State, gave it a pretty good push. George Fitzpatrick, though, did seem like the more, I don't know, off-guard moment for Ohio State.
Yeah, and Fitzpatrick's career was developing and unfolding in a very traditional way. Like, you as an offensive lineman, he came to Ohio State as a guy who played mostly lacrosse in high school, really started to grow into an offensive tackle body as he got towards the end of his high school career and over the last 3 years at Ohio State. And, you know, with Zen, he was forced into action against Oregon, acquitted himself as well as he could have at Outson Stadium, I think. I don't know that anybody would have been able to do as good a job as he did in that position. But then he had the opportunity to start the week after and didn't look like he belonged there. And then he got hurt. And so, you know, that opened the door for Donovan Jackson to save the day. But the decision by George Fitzpatrick certainly surprises me. But again, I think some of that is just predicated on Ohio State making an early move to bring in Philip Daniels and then Ethan Anianwa from Rice. And so if you're George Fitzpatrick, I think I can understand the challenge of heading into this season thinking, well, I still don't know if I have a starting spot, because you don't bring in Ethan Anianwa and Philip Daniels without the intention of them being a very regular contributors. And I think the most important piece of this entire puzzle for Tyler Bowen this year is whether or not Ethan Anianwa and Philip Daniels not just contribute, but start and dominate for Ohio State. And that's why, as you can see on the screen, like, to me, the overall success of the offensive line this year relies on those two guys really emerging and dominating.
Yeah, and if we're thinking about a full spring storyline, you go out there and this is the way it works. We make too big of a deal of what we see because we don't see everything. And it was spaced out in a way that those first two practices in March, Ethan Onyanwa, I thought we would walk into the Woody, we would see him at left tackle on day one. You can understand why he wouldn't be, but that's what I thought we were going to see. And I thought the same thing would be for Phillip Daniels at right tackle. Ohio State made a point of getting these guys in the winter transfer portal window. They had had an opportunity to get their feet wet a little bit, being around the team, go through winter workouts. Like, well, they're next in line. They were brought in for a reason, and they weren't. And at the same time, you can say, well, that's a good sign for the development of Austin Sereveld. We'll get to that. It's a good sign for Ian Moore as he tries to take the next step in a leap after a full year in the program. Nothing wrong with those guys developing on their own schedule and being in line to potentially compete or win those starting jobs. But that doesn't mean that it wasn't surprising to see it on day one. And it really only shifted from what we saw, again, which is not everything, which was Ethan Onyanwa sort of moving to the forefront at left tackle, but that not necessarily being the full-time case at right tackle. And with what you're talking about, with the expectations for them coming in, I don't bring that up to raise alarm bells, because I do think that we're going to get to the Austin Sereveld part of this shortly. But Ethan Onyanwa, I think, definitely took that challenge on. And Phillip Daniels is maybe in a spot where he doesn't have the same body of work. He started four games at Minnesota. That doesn't necessarily lend itself to being de facto, definitive, dominant, clear-cut starter on your first spring practice or even on your 15th. So I get that. They're in different stages here, but it is going to make for an intriguing offseason as we see what that means for Phillip Daniels, because I think, from my perspective, by the end of spring camp, Onyanwa was starting to give Tyler Bowen and Ryan Day what they anticipated.
Yeah, and also, if we go back to the depth chart here, you can see we are, apologies, wrong tab. We also don't have Justin Terry on here, the West Virginia transfer who came to Ohio State after spring ball. And I think that's primarily because I think he's going to end up at guard, but he's another one of these combo guys that can play both inside or outside. So Ohio State has the luxury of some moving parts, but the real luxury, the real, like, hey, we're winning type of feeling that you get is when someone like Austin Sereveld emerges. Because Austin Sereveld, if we go back to the recruiting class of 2023, it was Austin Sereveld, Luke Montgomery, Josh Padilla, and Miles Walker. Sereveld was recruited very aggressively by Alabama and Notre Dame. His final three was Ohio State, Alabama, Notre Dame. Those are three pretty good programs. But I don't think that anybody truly understood or saw the path for Austin Sereveld being one that opens up this quickly. To be the sixth offensive lineman for Ohio State, in essence, as a second-year player. And the leap that he's made is what you want to see. Like, that's the right reason for a transfer to not be in a position to dominate, to not be in a position to come over and take over a starting job. It's different, and this is where I think maybe we are still searching for the correct answer, because maybe it's a little bit of Phillip Daniels isn't ready to be the starter, because he only played the four games at Minnesota. He's in his, you know, he just finished his first or his second year with the Gophers. But maybe it's just because Austin Sereveld has turned a corner and said, I'm not giving you this job. And that is a positive. He's one of the three Iron Buckeyes. He emerged as a guy. I was looking through photos as I was trying to find the pictures for today's episode of The Beat. And nearly every photo I found of Austin Sereveld, he was either standing directly behind or right next to Donovan Jackson. And so I thought it was interesting and somewhat of a harbinger of things to come. Like, this is the guy that provides Tyler Bowen the true flexibility that he needs to find the right pieces this year. And so, I mean, it's somewhat in jest, as you can see on the screen, but to call him this year's MVP already would be folly. But I think that he's one of those players that maybe by the time the end of November comes around, when we're talking about unsung heroes or players who maybe don't get the credit they deserve for Ohio State's success, Austin Sereveld's work ethic, the time he's put in to now go from being an afterthought at guard in a recruiting class 2 years ago to being a starter. Ryan Day said, Austin Sereveld is a starter for us, period. We don't know where that's going to be. Because when we do the guards on Thursday, which I'm still going to put Austin Sereveld on there too, because he is guy that we just don't know where he's going to be. But he is the guy that I think really stirs the drink for Ohio State's offensive line and allows Tyler Bowen some flexibility and the ability to be patient with Phillip Daniels and Ethan Onyanwa, which I think is most important for two guys coming from Minnesota and Rice, respectively.
Well, I mean, look, if we're talking about positional flexibility, versatility, cross-training, which has been a theme, Tyler Bowen talked about it, And it happened under Justin Fry for the previous couple of years. And if we're in a world where, yes, remove the quarterback, remove Jeremiah Smith, then Caleb Downs, like it's cheating to do that. But I was making a case a year ago that Donovan Jackson, Ohio State doesn't win the national championship without him and his contributions.
I think that's indisputable. I mean, yeah. I don't think anybody would argue that at this point.
Yeah, well, good. That means that I'm maybe right about something for the first time in a long time.
Well, but write it down. Write down the date.
Austin Saraveld does a lot of the exact same things that Donovan Jackson does. And, you know, he has not to this point been very vocal because he hasn't had to be in front of the media. I think when we were doing the notebook before the Rose Bowl game, it was like, are we even going to have a chance to talk to him? I don't know if we did. I don't know if we got it till the Cotton Bowl. It's like he's not doing this for the attention, which is good. Donovan Jackson didn't seek that out either. But we haven't heard him become the focal point and the leader vocally for Ohio State to this point. But I think he may have to do that. Ethan Onyanwa, I think, is acclimating fine to the program. As I said, on the field, off the field, there doesn't seem to be any concern about that. But if what we talk about with the Buckeye Brotherhood and the understanding of what it takes to survive and thrive day in and day out in the Woody is true, the way that I think it is, Austin Saraveld has been living that. And those Iron Buckeye Awards, I don't think we make too much out of it. And I think in some
probably
ways,
not enough of it.
Yeah, in some ways, I think we don't focus on it enough. The Jeremiah Smith Award of that a year ago, we talked about it really for one of the first times. That should have been the neon flashing sign of what was to come. Like Mickey Marotti, Ryan Day, nobody in that strength staff hands that out on a whim. It means something when you earn it. And only three of them got it for Ohio State. Austin Saraveld claiming that tells me that whether that is with his words or with his work or a combination of both, he's doing the things that allowed Donovan Jackson to take that group that was beleaguered and battered and stretched thin all the way to a national championship. The offensive line is going to have to do that for a team that is breaking in. Whoever wins the starting quarterback job is going to be starting for the first time at Ohio State against Texas in a big noon game in late August. The offensive line is going to have to protect and they're going to have to run block. And whether that is guard or tackle, if I'm going to make this a stock watch and a bold prediction, I think that right tackle is going to be Austin Saraveld in the opener.
I'm leaning in that direction as well. And as your point is well made, it's not just the quarterback, it's brand new running backs. There's a lot of things that you're not really used to at this point if you're the offensive line at Ohio State. I'm still hoping to see Ian Moore make that push with Ethan Onyanwa. I don't believe that we should expect Ethan Onyanwa to look like early part of year two Josh Simmons when he starts his first game against Texas. Now, he played against Texas when he was at Rice and acquitted himself nicely, played well, but it's a different environment when there's 110,000 people at Ohio Stadium on a beautiful Saturday at noon. But the simple facts are that it took Josh Simmons a while to get acclimated as well. It took him 7-8 games before he started to really make that shift from San Diego State and the level of competition and preparation there to what Ohio State demands. And, you know, I think ultimately we were right, or I was right about Josh Simmons and his long-term projection.
I thought said he was going to be a second round pick.
I was right. I mean, I was closest, but not without going over. It's
Price is Right rules.
Yeah, Price is Right rules. If he's better than the second round pick, I win by default.
Got it.
I think that Ethan Onyanwa is going to be the starting left tackle, but like there's going to be some work that needs to be done there still. And I'm really fascinated as we get into camp season here at Ohio State this week, heading over to the Woody Hayes on Thursday morning. I want to see how Ethan Onyanwa, like maybe more than any player on the entire roster, you know, we like to see and I know you and Adam King talked about it on Tuesday's show, but like we like to see the physical changes from the end of spring to now. Ethan Onyanwa's development is more interesting to me than any player on the roster because I think that he doesn't need to lose a lot of weight. He lost a lot when he already got to Ohio State, but I think that just seeing how he then changes that over these last 2 months is going to be pretty important because he's not a guy we see on social media. So it's fascinating. And Tyler Bowen, like this is a guy who played offensive line at Maryland. He understands the position, but he hasn't been an offensive line coach since 2017, as I mentioned earlier. And that's why it's Charles Dickey from Oklahoma State, Marcus Johnson from Purdue. This is a three-man offensive line group leading the way for Ohio State. And it's very interesting to me to see the chemistry developing here between this group.
I think the most fascinating part of that is it feels like that, you know, Ryan Day described it where, you know, Tyler Bowen and those three guys have to have one voice. And it felt like they had that. So that's step one, because you're managing a group that has five starters and 18 total players in it. We'll get into more of that in the moving pieces when we get to the interior with the guards and center. But then, okay, Tyler Bowen's job beyond that, you have those two assistants and you are collaborating and putting together a functional offensive line then to support as the run game coordinator. Then what does that look like as you start to work with Brian Hartline and Keenan Bailey and Billy Fessler and Ryan Day? Because that chemistry part, we talk about it all the time with the on-field piece. Now, the coaching staff has to do that as well. And again, it's not something that I bring up because I'm concerned about it. I'm just, how does it work? Because sometimes Ryan Day has brought in coaches and the implementation of what he imagines doesn't work out in the way that he wants. And I'm not going to name names. It's not that difficult to figure out who we might be talking about.
There's a couple.
It doesn't work out perfectly. It's both sides of the football that's happened. You do your best to do all the research. And again, it makes it sound like I'm, you know, on alert. I'm not. But that's the most important part, because all of this does come back to getting into that offensive staff meeting room and Tyler Bowen and Brian Hartline putting together pass and run game concepts that marry together, fit together, and serve the greater good of the Ohio State offense. Like, that sounds overblown. But they're going to be working together for the first time. They've had 6 months to do that. I think the familiarity there with Justin Fry and Brian Hartline would have been different. So there's a getting to know you process. There is a collaborative process. And I don't think you can finish all of that in spring football. So I've been impressed with Tyler Bowen's public appearances. I think that the guys in the room seem to gravitate towards him. So I don't have any part of me that's concerned at all about the development of the offensive line. I've been on the record. I think there's no reason to be concerned. And I think this is going to be one of the best and deepest offensive lines that the Buckeyes have had maybe since I've covered them for the last 13 seasons. But that, if I'm talking about the part that's most fascinating to me, it is how all of this plays into Brian Hartline's first year as the play caller and offensive coordinator, and what Tyler Bowen's role is in that.
Yeah, I mean, we both heard from different people over the last few months about the challenges of the 2023 season and Brian Hartline's first year as the offensive coordinator, Justin Fry taking over, and is trying to find a balance between the run game coordination, the pass game coordination, and what it meant for the entirety of the offense. And, you know, we spent a lot of time last spring talking about the coaching staff for the 2024 Buckeyes and how it was clearly Ryan Day's best, most cohesive, best built staff. And we saw the results of that. Now, it doesn't mean things were perfect. There was still the Oregon game. There was still the Michigan game, where you look at it on the defensive side of the ball or the offensive side of the ball against Michigan and say, what the heck just happened? But this is where the metal meets the road for Tyler Bowen. Like, if you are not able to, the rubber meets the road. You push the metal to the metal
on the train tracks. Is that?
Yes. You push the pedal to the metal, then the rubber meets the road.
There it is. Yeah.
And this is what Tyler Bowen's, he has two jobs, right? Now let's call it, he's the offensive line coach. We know that is his official title. Offensive line coach, run game coordinator. His job is to come in and be a dynamic, better recruiter than Justin Fry was. And that's not to say we're not going to relitigate the entire Justin Fry recruiting experience, but Tyler has a different task ahead of him. And it is go win the battles that Justin wasn't winning. And you do that by expanding your net and going after more people. And he's done that already. The second part of that is being the run game coordinator and following in the footsteps of Chip Kelly to make that continue, or to keep that being a focal point of the Ohio State offense, and one that doesn't take a step or two backwards, because the run game in 2021, 2022, and 2023 was pretty meh. And we saw what happened when Ohio State needed to get short yardage situations accomplished. And that wasn't the case last year. Some of that is going to be outside of Tyler Bowen's control, I think, because you don't have a 6'5", 240-pound quarterback. But some of it is just understanding how this offense is all going to work together. And having someone that Ohio State believes can do that, I think, is first and foremost for Ryan Day, which is why when Tyler Bowen was hired, I think there were a lot of people confused, and myself included, because I thought that they really needed a veteran offensive line coach because you have all these young offensive minds. I mean, if you look at the coaching staff at Ohio State, Ryan Day and Carlos Lachlan are 46 years old. Brian Hartline, Billy Fessler, Keenan Bailey, they're all, Tyler Bowen now, are all under 38. So it is exceptionally young. But Tyler Bowen has 15 years of experience, and he's coached the NFL. He's coached tight ends. He's coached he's been the offensive coordinator. He's obviously coached offensive line. Like, he's done it all. But Ryan Day's been very, very good, I think, in my opinion, about his hires, and he's made the right moves most of the time. This one is going to be really interesting to look back on, because there were a lot of longtime veteran offensive line coaches out there that were overlooked and passed over in order to bring in a guy who was had experience coordinating, but also is an elite recruiter.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big challenge, and we're going to get into more of what that looks like, because there are other dominoes that have to fall into place. There's going to be more Austin Saarfeld conversation when we get to the interior of the line. And maybe this is a world where I think you were brushing up against it, Berm, where Austin Saarfeld could start at right tackle, but doesn't have to play every snap at right tackle. You could use him to supplement at guard. You could let Philip Daniels get work there. Maybe that is a way in this 16-17 game era that we're in. Ohio State has talked about this a lot, and they were forced into the rotation a year ago because of injuries. But I think they may be more open to the idea of voluntarily doing that in games based on what they saw and the needs that arose over the length of the year. It's pretty unlikely that your top five guys are going to stay healthy for every single game in this era. So that's, I think.
Do you remember how much like clamoring and wailing of and gnashing of teeth there were when Ohio State said they were going to rotate interior linemen in the playoffs? And
yeah,
like we were like, Tegra Shapola, Luke Montgomery, Austin Saarfeld, all these guys are going to play. This is the dumbest thing we've ever heard of. And turned out okay. Now, some of that, again, was
again, forced. But they also had to.
Yeah, because like, Austin Saarfeld was hurt and Tegra Shapola was dinged up. And like, this is the way the world works now. This is why you have to have 18 deep in the offensive line room, especially as we move toward a 17-game season. Now, fortunately for Ohio State, you've got a couple weeks off after Texas, so you can work on some of those kinks, but most of that, I think you need to have really firmly established, especially your tackles, by the middle of August, because Julian Sain or Lincoln Kienholz or whoever the quarterback is going to be needs to know who's out there protecting him. And you're playing against, in week one, one of the most aggressive and physical and deep and talented defensive lines and defensive fronts in the country, including probably the country's best pass rusher in Colin Simmons in week one. So you need to have this figured out. And so it lead to some interesting weeks ahead, I think, for Tyler Bowen, Charles Dickey, and Marcus Johnson.
We're going to get into what the rest of those pieces could look like. That's going to be Freaky Friday, looking at the interior of the offensive line, because we're going to have a Three Things Thursday, partially because, Berm, it's camp season, baby, and we're going to get your thoughts on that. There's also, maybe we'll talk about moving the band and premium seats and what that means for 2026 in the horseshoe. As Ohio State announced that change that's coming, it won't apply to this year, but we'll get into more of that in the days ahead and maybe on Three Things Thursday. But as Berm said as well, we will be back at the Woody. There's going to be recruits out there. There's going to be the current Buckeyes coming off of workouts, floating around and getting out. And we're going to see who's instructing some of those position groups, which is always fun to see who wants to take on that leadership role. So it is that time of year, business about to pick up on the beat. Couldn't be more excited. And we couldn't be more appreciative that you decided to spend a little Wednesday with us with another Position Rewind, looking at the offensive tackles on the Austin and Berm Show, 10TV, 10TV Plus, The Fan, and now YouTube, along with every other audio platform that you might use. However you found us, thank you. He's Berm. I'm Austin. We'll talk to you tomorrow.